Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you. Our next guest on Damntown is an actor and author of the wonderful book, My Adventures with God. He is cast member of the acclaimed, although unjustly overlooked by Emmy voters, series One Day at a Time, and one of our favorite people to talk to, Stephen Tobolowsky, joins us. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Rich. How's everything going?
As good as can be expected, I would say. How about you?
Let me just tell you, you know, the latest on One Day at a Time, not to hex anything, you know, we occasionally get overlooked by Emmy voters, that's true, but it still may not be dead.
That's exciting.
The coronavirus may not have put us under. It's still possible. And so I have my fingers crossed, and everyone who likes the show should have their fingers crossed, and hopefully we'll know something in a, well, who knows. But sooner than later.
Well, good. Well, we certainly have fingers and toes crossed for that, because it's a wonderful series, and we want to see it keep going for as long as everybody involved wants to do it.
That's right. That's right. They're just trying to figure out methods of safety and what's going to happen, because this is one of those game-changing situations that nothing is probably going to look the same at the other end of this juncture of our moment in history.
No, and we hear a lot of talk about people being bailed out by the government and small businesses, and not enough attention being paid to the arts community, and not only arts organizations, but individuals who rely on that for their living. And I know insurance is becoming an issue for people with SAG-AFTRA, and getting work is difficult, and you want to go back to work, but people need to be safe and feel like it's an environment they can step back into.
Yeah, I just last week, you know, because there is no work. There is no work out here. I think they're starting up a few projects. Maybe they're shooting in Atlanta. A couple things are starting up in Los Angeles, but very carefully monitored. I did get my first film offer last week, and I was thrilled, you know, to get the idea that someone was going to shoot. However, and they said they were only going to shoot me for one day, so that made it very nice. But to do this part, as I read the script, I would have to play a sleazy guy. I've done that before. But in this role, I have a tarantula at one point on my head. And another point, a tarantula crawling up my face. And I'm thinking, you know, there's no amount of money. There's no amount of money right now. Because, you know, if there is a tarantula, there's going to be a tarantula handler that you can bet will not be social distancing for me. Or I won't be social distancing from him. Oh, gosh. You know, you would think that with difficulty in show business, you would pull out something that you were sure people would come to see at the movie theaters, or on cable or whatever, as opposed to the tarantula on Stephen's head. But that's what I got off. So we had to pass that one by, and we're waiting for the next big off.
I hope it's free of arachnids. I did enjoy watching you and Anne last weekend. Anne's been very busy, and you as well, in the 11th Annual Summer Playwrights Festival that the Rode Theater Company is doing virtually this year, and a very funny show you did called The Wide Yawning Infinity.
That's right, and we had, believe it or not, so this is the 11th year the Rode Theater has done this, and for people who don't know what the Rode Theater is in Los Angeles, it's a theater that for, I believe, 29 years has been dedicated to doing the works of new playwrights, of plays that have world premiere plays. And the second tier are plays that have not been on Broadway, anything like that, but have never been done, at least in our part of the world. So we do a lot of premieres. So for 11 years now, out of the 39, there's been the New Playwrights Festival of absolute premiere plays. This year, we had to do it virtually on Zoom, which is torture. I mean, for me, as an actor on Zoom, and I'm directing one of them, too, but the difference between watching a play on Zoom and a department store security camera is very small. It is just very difficult to do this. However, for example, last night there was really quite a brilliant play, and that we watched. This festival, so far, has been the most successful in the last 11 years.
Wow!
To such an extent that they got a letter from all the playwrights that the playwrights have to agree that they can continue running the festival. These plays are going to be streamed for a week now. It isn't just one shot anymore. They're going to extend the festival, and everybody will have a chance to dip in and see some of these plays. So everybody can see Why Yawning Infinity and amazing play. I saw Agatha, absolutely amazing play by Angela Davis. It is about the only woman president of was the civil war in Rwanda. Is that where the terrible genocides were?
Yes.
She was president of Rwanda for 14 hours.
Wow.
And I never heard of this woman before in my life. And this play chronicles the story of her life. And it is amazing. The 14 hours she was president and what she did to try to save the country in those 14 hours. She was a university teacher who they just put in the slot as vice president, and that whole genocide began with the president being shot out of the sky. And so suddenly she gets the phone call, "You're president." And in her 14 hours, she did so much to try to unify the country and end the Civil War. It's a beautiful play. Just really murdered me, even on Zoom. So I highly recommend it. And what I'll do, Rich, is I'll send you the particulars of when the festival is going to happen, so you'll know, and then I'm going to post it on Facebook.
Excellent.
So people can watch it, and it's free. It's free. No salesman will call. I'll ask for a donation, but it's free.
And you can get more information, too, right away at roadtheater.org. Also, I'm speaking of One Day at a Time, the cast got to participate virtually in this year's Paley Fest. What was that experience like?
That was phenomenal. That was a wonderful experience. And it was, you know, we did it a while back, and we did it on Zoom. And for all of us being a part, and I thought it was really great questions, and the chemistry of the cast, it was wonderful to be with the writers and producers again. It was, I believe it was the day Carl Reiner passed away. And so Norman could not be there. And that was the one dark spot of it. But it's absolutely wonderful to be able to catch the Paley Fest. That was really terrific.
And Norman Lear celebrated a birthday as well, number 98, and remarkable to have him around, but he's very much still hands-on part of that production.
Yeah, very much so, and he gives us notes. Did I ever tell you my old Norman Lear story? I'm not sure if I have on this show.
Well, if you haven't, even if you have, we need to hear it again.
The growing up in Oak Cliff was a very racist place to grow up, you know? And I was very lucky in that my parents were not at all. So our family did not grow up with that in our hearts and souls. But watching Norman Lear on TV in Oak Cliff, all those shows, All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Maude, One Day at a Time, it really did kind of change my life. And when I came out to Los Angeles, the first thing I did was to write to Norman Lear's casting director, Jane Murray, and just said, "I have always admired Mr. Lear. I'm a young actor from Texas, and if there's any chance to audition for anything, I'll be damned rich." She called me that week, and we didn't have cell phones then. I gave her my home number. Jane Murray called me at home and said, "Are you available for something this week?"
Wow.
And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And my first job in Los Angeles was to play one of Loretta's fans on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my first job in Los Angeles. And the first television show I saw in Los Angeles was a production, was One Day at a Time, the original One Day at a Time, because a woman from our hometown, Kay Callan, had a recurring role, and Kay invited me to the show. And I met Norman way back when I had hair. And that was the first TV show I saw. So when I came in for my audition for One Day at a Time, I reminded Norman of when I met him 30 years before. And so it is a wonderful through line to have Norman as still part of my life. I love it.
That is tremendous. We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky. What's the latest on the Tobolowsky files? It sounds like you have, five of them that David has put together so far?
Well, that number has increased to 8.
Oh, good.
I'm writing 14, and there's probably going to be at least another 2 more. And David says he's going to start releasing them on the Internet in the middle of September. And these are... I love some of these stories. I don't know why I never told them before, but I didn't. And so if people don't know what I do in the Tobolowsky file, just in 2008 is when I broke my neck, right, and riding on the horse on the side of an active volcano in Iceland. So I couldn't do anything, and I almost died. And so I thought, well, I'll start writing true stories from my life as a legacy for my 2 boys, so they'll know something about their father. And about that time, a student from Harvard, David Chen, called me at home and said, I really love your storytelling. Can we do a podcast? I had no idea what a podcast was then. Can we do a podcast of your story? And I said, well, actually, I started writing these stories already. So we started recording them over the Internet. He was in Boston at Harvard, and I was here. We started recording. They went online, and they were basically showbiz-related and movie-related. But the fourth story happened when I got a phone call. My mother had a heart attack, and I went back to Dallas to be with her. And it was about the last day my mother was alive. And I called David up on the phone, and I said, well, I've written this story, but it's got nothing to do with showbiz. And it's got nothing to do with anything. But it's just the last day I spent with my mother. And David said, whatever you write, Tobo, we're going to put it on. So I put that fourth story on, and that story went all over the world.
Mm.
And then the podcast started getting picked up by NPR and PRI radio stations all over the country. And that's what led to the 2 books. So now we have, I think, 84 hours of these true stories from my life, and I try to have no embellishment in them. There's the story of my broken neck in Iceland and being held hostage at gunpoint in a grocery store in Dallas, and my falling in love for the first time in college, and my marriage with Anne, and our honeymoon, all sorts of stories. Usually they're funny. Usually they're funny. And so these stories are, again, fairly remarkable events that happened in my life. And the thing I found that happened, Rich, when you tell a true story and not an embroidered story, is that when you tell a true story, people hear it in the story that it's true. Even if it's incredible, they hear it and their ear goes, it's true, and they relate it to their life. And the number of emails I have gotten about people saying, you know, that happened to me. The same thing happened to me. And then they tell me what happened to them, and it's not the same at all. But they identified with the truth of the story. So that's what I do. That's the Tobo Files, and that's going to start coming out. Right now you can get all of those old episodes, the 84 hours of them, I think it's TobolowskyFiles.com. Spell my name correctly. TobolowskyFiles.com. And all of the old episodes are there, for free. Again, for free.
Well, and
no commerce here.
Two of us here who have listened to all 84 hours and love them. And Carrie has nowhere to drive. Normally, the Tobolowsky Files is his accompaniment for his drive down to New Orleans and back. But even now, he misses them because he's reduced to talking to his family at night.
Oh, God, that's so sad, Carrie. Well, it's interesting. As I said, I began this as a legacy for my children, and they never listened to it. Oh. And now, I don't know if we've discussed this. Do you know that now I'm a grandfather?
I don't believe I did know that. No, that is very exciting.
Very exciting. 1 month into grandfatherdom, and now I get it. You know, if you were to ask me a few years ago, oh, God, you want to be a grandfather? No, it wouldn't be on my radar. Now it is the most glorious and wonderful position to have in life because you realize all the difficulty it took to get here. You had to be able to have a relationship in which you could have children and have those children grow up to be in a frame of mind to where they wanted children. And so in the last month, my son and his wife began listening to the Tobolowsky Files for the first time. And because he wanted his wife to know something about me so they could trust me with the baby. It has turned out to be a blessing that way, too. And yes, this is the one thing about Grandfather DeMose. And that is, it is all love and no responsibility. And I never really got that before because you're able to hold that baby and take care of that baby and everything. But as soon as that baby starts to cry, you pass them back to mom and dad. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not going to get that. See, I didn't have my son until I was 55. And so if I become a grandfather, it can go two ways. Either it's because he is far too precocious for his own good, or it'll happen, but I'll have no idea what's going on.
They asked me to be Jacques or Jacques in As You Like It, and the Seven Ages of Man, Rich.
Oh, yeah.
We all end up in the slippered pantaloon with our shrunk shank, sans eyes, sans ears, sans mouth, sans everything. And that's where we end up. We just have to hope we have loved ones around us to help us. Oh, if there's one moment, I did have a remarkable event happen.
Oh, please.
With my father.
Oh, yeah. Tell us, please.
Dad is 97, and Dad is of the age where he sans everything, can't remember anything at all, and he's blind, and he can't walk. And I try to call him 2, 3, 4 times a week in Texas because I can't visit him because of COVID. So I called probably now with COVID brain, I'm saying probably about 4 weeks ago. I called Dad and told him how excited I was about the baby and how hard it is that Robert has a place of his own now. My son is not there. And Dad suddenly opened up and he began talking about his past. And he started saying, oh, Stephen, the hardest thing for your mother and I was when all the kids moved out of the house. And you know what it was we missed the most? Was the laughter. He said, Stephen, there's very little laughter in home. But when you have children, your house is filled with laughter. And we, your mother and I, didn't recognize that until all of you had moved out. And it was something that we had to deal with the rest of our lives, the difficulty. Spend as much time as you can with the baby, and you will have laughter in your life. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what a gift was that?
That is absolutely wonderful. I noticed, too, you've been enjoying quite a bounty this summer right from the garden. My goodness, you have been eating well during these COVID times.
Well, I may be on the brink of some sort of dietary bonanza in that Anne, who's always been a good cook, my wife, every day she makes homemade cinnamon rolls or cheesecake or muffins or some kind of custard or something. My diet is either vegetables from the garden. We have string beans. We have celery. We have tomatoes like crazy. So we have salads from the garden and piles of desserts. And I've lost about almost 20 pounds.
Wow.
And hopefully I'm not dying. You know, I guess during this period of time, maybe I'm dying. But I'm feeling too good and enjoying those muffins way too much. So Anne is making bounty out of eggplant and all sorts of things you could imagine. We cut way back on any kind of meat. We occasionally will have fish as protein or a little chicken, but we cut way back on protein, and I'm feeling great, losing weight. And now, in the COVID time, besides having the COVID brain and making everything so much more difficult, now I only have two pair of pants I can wear. The other pants are too big, and they just fall off of me. So I end up wearing the same clothes every day, which makes the present lockdown oh so much more depressing. Except as we speak, as we are speaking now, the house is filled with the scent of fresh cinnamon buns coming out of the oven. And let me tell you, man, yummy, yummy, yummy. Can't wait.
Well, that's great to hear. It's great to hear your voice and talk with you again. Send our best to Anne as well. We wish you well. Congratulations on becoming a grandfather. Keep the tarantulas off your face. And
I will. And you two guys, you keep safe and keep well. You hearten us all the way here on the other coast.
Thank you, Stephen. Be well, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Okay, Rich. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye now. Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown.